Hariom to all of you. First of all, my apologies for cancelling the class last week. I hope all of you got the message. And for those of you who didn't receive the message, please register your email with Tila so that she can put you on the email list. Okay. So, we have covered up to chapter 3, verse 32. And let's take just a quick look at what has happened so far. In this chapter, entitled Karma Yoga, Krishna has emphasized the importance of doing our duty, not running away from our duty. And also, he's going to emphasize that one should not look upon other people's duty and think that is more easier. Why not I give up my duty and do something else? And he's going to talk about that also. So having talked about Karma Yoga in this chapter, in verse number 30, Krishna summarized for us the 5 important points in Karma Yoga. It is a 5-point plan for us to follow. The crux of Karma Yoga in verse number 30, Krishna says, the first point is Adhyatma Chetasa. You will see in the second line the word Adhyatma Chetasa, which means simply to keep God as your primary goal in life. You must have that spiritual goal as the primary goal in life. You can have many secondary goals. You want to get an MBA, you want to set up business, you want to travel the world, no problem. But keep God as the primary goal in life. Number one. Number two, second instruction, Mai Sanyas, Mai Sarvani Karmani Sanyasya. First line and second line, it's connected. Mai Sarvani Karmani Sanyasya. Sarvani, all. Karmani, all your actions. Whether spiritual or non-spiritual actions. All the actions, duties, responsibilities that you do, sannyasa, surrender that to who? Mai, means God. Have or cultivate the attitude of what we discuss, Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. O Lord, whatever I am doing is for you. If I am working, is for you. If I am taking care of my family, it is for you. Every action, keep God in mind. Surrender that action to Lord. Therefore, in that attitude, you will find that every action becomes an offering to God. Every action is converted into worship. That attitude is called Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. Arpana means offering to God. Cultivate that in your mind continuously. Right? Second instruction. Third instruction, third line, Nirashi. Nirashi means free yourself from the worry of the future. That is also one thing always troubling our mind. Everything that we do, we are always worried about the future outcome. Understand, every karma, every action that you do will produce a result. And very often that result is not in your control. Up to a point you can control the result, but you can never predict what actually happens. So what do? Mentally surrender the results also to God. Accept everything coming from God. Everything is accepted with the attitude, whether favorable or unfavorable, accept it as Ishvara Prasadam Buddhi. Have that amount of faith in God that whatever He is giving you is the best which is meant for you, whether it is to your favor or not to your favor. Ishvara Prasadam Buddhi. That's the third instruction. Fourth instruction, Nirmama. Nirmama, you can see in also the third line. Nirmama means free yourself from this attitude of ego, ahamkara. Because whenever successful things happen in our life, we always take full credit. So understand intelligently that you are doing the action, but always invoke the grace of God also. So thank God for everything good that happens in your life also. Don't always maintain an attitude of humility. Be humble. Whatever you get, whatever possessions you have, understand that it is by the very grace of Lord. And this attitude is called Ishvara Anugraha. Anugraha means the grace of God. Invoke the grace of God continuously in whatever you are successful in. So always keeping God in mind, that's very important. The grace of God is always upon me. And Krishna says, if you follow these four instructions properly, what is the end result? The last line of verse 30, Vigata Jwara. Vigata Jwara means there is no mental fever. Not physical fever, here we are talking about mental fever. What do we mean by no mental fever? Meaning if you follow this path of Karma Yoga as the four instructions he has given you, you will find that your mind, there is no agitation, there is no irritation, there is no disturbance in your mind. Your mind is at peace in all your actions because you have surrendered everything in the hands of God and you accept everything coming also from God. There is no disturbance in your mind. Vigata Jwara. Now, having given this philosophy of Karma Yoga in a capsule form in verse 30, Krishna also does not want to force this philosophy upon us. We have the freedom to choose. And this is one of the very important themes in our religion. That religion or philosophy is never forced upon you. You have a choice. You can choose to follow or you can choose not to follow. But you should also know that if you follow, what is the consequence? If you don't follow, what is the consequence? So once you are aware, then you make your choice. So in verse 31, Krishna wants to say, Ye me matam idam. Matam idam means this matam, these teachings of mine, for those who follow. And follow, how do they follow? Very important word to note there, nityam. Meaning, you should cultivate this philosophy every day, all the time. Not only when you feel like it, when it is convenient to you, or every weekend you implement it. It is to be implemented daily in your life. And two very important qualities when you follow this Karma Yoga philosophy. The first quality is Shraddha. You must have faith. Very important. Why is faith very important? Because understand, even though you are following this Karma Yoga philosophy, you will still meet many types of situations in your life. Favorable, unfavorable situations will come. It doesn't mean that from today onwards you change and become Karma Yogi, that all the situations suddenly become favorable. No. Because of your past karmas, you will have to go through it. So have faith that the purification or the result is not external. Where is the result? It is internal. So have faith that if you are following this philosophy, there is internal purification. So number one is faith. Number two is the anasuyanto. In the third line you see the word anasuyanto. It means you should not be finding faults in this philosophy. Right? So we read the scriptures, we must accept the scriptures to be true. We must accept the words of the Guru to be true. If the words of the scripture and the words of the Guru you find as not true, means what is wrong? Something is wrong with your understanding. Right? So, doubt, don't doubt the scriptures, doubt your intellectual capacity to understand. So, do not question. You can question to clear your doubts, but do not have doubts on the words of the scripture. So Krishna says, what is the benefit if for those who follow my teachings? Anutishtanti means, Anutishtanti, manava. Manava means people. who anutishtanti, who follow my teachings, what is the benefit? Muchyante tepi karmabhi. Muchyante, they are free from the bondage of action. Meaning what? Every action that you do with this attitude of karma yoga will not collect a future karmic debt. There will be no bondage of action. There will be like what the scriptures describe as a roasted seed. When there is a roasted seed, the roasted seed cannot produce any more further, what do you call? Plants, or cannot produce any further fruits. So the mind of a karma yogi is like that, is a roasted seed. That action cannot produce a further karma. The karma ends there itself. That is the advantage. Okay. But supposing you say, no, I don't want to follow. Also, okay, no problem, Krishna says. Then you read verse 32. So in verse 32, he says, na anutishtanti. You see in verse 31, he put anutishtanti means those who follow. In verse 32, he says, second line, na anutishtanti, those who don't want to follow. And why is it that they don't follow? Because of, again, two reasons. One is they don't have faith, number one. Number two, they have doubts on the words of the scriptures. They have doubts. Avyasuyanto. That means they find faults in the scriptures. So they keep on reading the scriptures. They may go and listen to spiritual talks, but they always are looking for faults. This cannot be true, that cannot be true, this cannot be applied, this is not practical. They have total faults. They find faults in the scriptures. And when you find faults in the scriptures, who is the loser? Is the guru the loser? Is the scriptures the loser? Who's the loser? The devotee is the loser. So ultimately, you are the one who lose everything. And what happens, Krishna says to such people, sarva, third line, sarva, all jnana, all types of spiritual knowledge, which they have listened to, which they have read also, know them to be vimuda. That means they have total confusion about the knowledge. They have total distortion about the knowledge. They don't have clarity about the knowledge. So either, as I told you, three types of knowledge can cause us problems. One is
partial knowledge.
You only know part of it, you don't know most of it, and then you think that you know everything, right? That is, partial knowledge can be very dangerous also. Second is
wrong knowledge.
That you have completely the reverse knowledge. And third is no knowledge at all. So all three types of knowledge can be very destructive. And for these people, Krishna says, Viddhi, no, Nashta Achetasa. Achetasa means Nashta means they are doomed to failure. What failure? Materially, they may be very progressive. They may have a lot of possessions, riches, wealth, fame, but where are they destroyed? Spiritually, they are destroyed. Know them to be spiritually destroyed. So you know what is the benefit of following. You can also understand what is the benefit of not following. The benefit is yours. So whether you want to follow, you have to decide. Okay, that is what we covered up to last week. Now, in verse number 33, he makes a very interesting point here. Now, most of us have rajasic and tamasic gunas. The majority of us. Very few of us have sattvic gunas. Majority have rajasic and tamasic gunas. And it is these gunas that form our personality. How we act, how we think, how we behave is totally dictated by these gunas. So if you look at the last line of verse 33, Krishna makes one statement there. He says, Nigraha kim karishati. Kim karishati nigraha. Kim, what? Karishati will do, nigraha restrain. What will restrain you? How is going to restrain going to help you? If I have rajasic, tamasic gunas, Krishna is saying, what will restrain you? Now, if you read this verse, what does it tell you? If Krishna says, what will restrain you, means what? do whatever you want, how to restrain, what is restraint going to help you? Because you have rajasic, tamasic gunas, you are going to behave in that way anyway. So what do restraint do? Means what? That means what? You have no choice, isn't it? But do you really have no choice? As a human being, do you have a choice or you don't have a choice? Have a choice, right? So when he says, what will restraint do, doesn't mean you go ahead and do whatever you want. So two things we must understand here. One, if we follow our gunas, and if we have rajasic and tamasic gunas, and we just follow our gunas, it can lead to our destruction, spiritual downfall, right? Because we won't follow karma yoga, we will follow our gunas. Rajasic gunas are selfish gunas. We always want to do selfish things. Tamasic gunas are those that keep us in ignorance. And yet, if you suppress the gunas, what happens? If you decide, I don't want to do any actions, I will suppress the gunas, what happens? I won't act. The gunas are in me, they are driving me, but I won't act. What will happen? No spiritual growth, and also one way or the other the gunas will force you to act. If you recall in this very chapter, verse 6, Krishna said that person who restrains himself physically but mentally the mind is running on all sensual objects or objects of the world, such a person is a hypocrite. So by expressing your gunas you are not going to progress. By suppressing your gunas also, you are not going to progress. So, what should you do then? So, this thing is to be understood. That when we have rajasic and tamasic gunas, for a rajasic person, desires are in that person. It's natural part of him. The rajasic gunas are natural in him. And these gunas are driving you to all types of desires. And if you tell the rajasic person, suppress your desires, it is not possible. It is not logical. So, all our actions generally are motivated by two types of desires. One desire is called sakama. Kama means desire. S-A-K-A-M-A, sakama means our actions are motivated by selfish desires. That is one type of desire. We are motivated by selfish desire. What is in it for me? Is there gain for me? Then only I'll do it. What can I gain? What I want from this action? Personally, selfishly, I am motivated by sakama, by selfish desires. The other type of desires is called nishkama. N-I-S-H, nishkama. The word kama is their desire. But nishkama means selfless desires. I am motivated to do good for others. I want to do seva, I want to give charity, I want to do good for others. Now, rajasic person will be motivated by what kind of desires?
Selfish
desires. Sakama kama. And to ask that person to give up selfish desires is not possible. It's not practical. So what here Krishna is trying to say is that do not suppress, but express with the right attitude. Meaning what? If I want to satisfy my desires, that means I lead a life of kama artha. I want, artha means possessions. Kama means I want to satisfy all my desires. Fine, go ahead. But satisfy kama, satisfy artha, but what? What is the but?
Make sure
you add in dharma to guide you. So have dharma in your life, minimum. Don't talk to a rajasic person about moksha and all that. Minimum, at least have dharmic desires. Satisfy your desires, go ahead. Acquire any possessions you want, go ahead. But earn legitimately, spend legitimately. Satisfy your desires legitimately. Follow the path of dharma. So don't restrain, but express your gunas intelligently. When you follow the path of dharma, what happens? To pursue kama artha, you follow dharma, what happens? purification happens. By natural process, the purification happens. Then that person is ready to take to nishkama karmas. Then the person will think about contributing back to society also. So, actions directed towards dharma also, that's the minimum. And for a tamasic person, at least the least they can do is dedicate all your actions, whatever actions you're doing, dedicate to God. So, have that attitude, I do my actions, I do my duty, but minimum I dedicate to God. That's why you find all the three type of yogas which are given to us is for the purpose of motivating. The tamasic person is motivated to come to rajas. How? How do you motivate the tamasic person to come to rajas? He has maximum tamasic gunas. At least you want to, you can't expect him from tamas to go to sattva. So at least from tamas you want to boost him to rajas. What do you do? Karma yoga. You encourage them to do seva. You encourage them to do some form of activity. Going to temple, prayers, rituals. All this you make the tamasic person active. So at least he starts doing some action. Some spiritual action. So from tamas to rajas by using karma yoga. And if a person is rajasic, which means his mind is running in 100 directions, how do you get him to subdue the mind? It's not ready for knowledge. Mind is running around. Upasana yoga. That is, what upasana actually means meditation, but at that lower level, what we mean by meditation is by prayers, by rituals, by going to temples, etc. So karma is more action orientated, upasana is more prayers, rituals, etc. To focus the person's mind towards divinity. At least some of his time he will move to divinity. If you are a very active person, all the while thinking about your selfish needs, at least you take some of the time and move into some spiritual activity. That's called upasana yoga. Then through that upasana yoga, you find the mind becomes a little bit more sattvic. And when the mind is sattvic, then what do you propose to such a person? Jnana yoga. When with jnana yoga, a sattvic person becomes what we call gunatit. He goes over or transcends all the three gunas. So that is what we call moksha. So from tamas to rajas by karma yoga, from rajas to sattva by upasana yoga, from sattva to transattva by jnana yoga. Therefore, Krishna is saying here, don't suppress, don't express, but express intelligently. Just like a river, if you want to dam a river, what happens? It overflows and causes destruction. That is called suppression. If you just allow the river to flow, what happens? Water is wasted, isn't it? It just goes into the sea. So what do you do to a river? You harness the power of the river and you use it for agriculture. You use it in the right way. So suppression is dangerous. Expression without some goal is dangerous. Have a goal and express the desire. So that's why the word here, what will restrain do, must be understood very carefully. Otherwise people will say, Krishna is saying, what will restrain do? That means simply go and do whatever you want. No, that's not what he means. So what he says here, sat, in verse number 33 here, he says, Jnanavan, a man of knowledge, a man of knowledge, understanding his own sattvic nature, a man of knowledge has got predominant sattvic nature. But even if I have sattvic nature, if I do not know how to use it also, it is of waste, isn't it? So, a sattvic person can express his actions in different ways. One person who is sattvic might take to meditation and a life of austerity and meditation. Such a person also progresses spiritually. Another person with sattvic nature may say, I want to do service to society. I want to do seva. I want to give charity. I want to go to old folks home and serve. That's another way to express your sattvic gunas. Another person may say, with my sattvic nature, I want to go and give knowledge. So there are different ways. Even for sattvic person, he says, a man of knowledge, a jnanavan, knows how to harness his sattvic nature and use it for his spiritual growth. Even animals, he says, yanti prakritim yanti bhutani. Bhutani means all the animals also, they know how to, yanti means to follow their nature. You can take any particular animal from any group, then the whole type of animals will behave the same way. Every dog behaves the same way, every cat behaves the same way. There is no difference in one group of animals to the other. So animals follow their nature. A wise person also follows the nature. Therefore, what Krishna is saying, follow the nature but in an intelligent manner. Follow dharma for a rajasic person, do your actions. For a tamasic person, dedicate all your actions to God. Because by suppression, the gunas are not going to go away. So what here also it means for Arjuna, you have got rajasic gunas. You are a kshatriya. What are you trying to do? Leave the battlefield and become a sannyasa. By becoming a sannyasi, you don't have sattvic gunas. You have rajasic gunas. What are you going to do? Some way or other, these rajasic gunas are going to spur you again to do all kinds of actions as a kshatriya. But you are already a sannyasi, you can't go and fight with people, right? You can't take up arms and go into battle. You are already a sannyasi. So what are you going to do with the gunas? Internal battle. So it's better for you to stay on this battlefield, express your gunas, but fight a dharmic war. Don't fight adharmic war, fight a dharmic war, which is what you are already doing. So what you are doing is correct. Don't leave the battlefield and do something else. Follow your guna in the right manner. Express your gunas in the right manner. So there is no such thing as bad gunas or good gunas. It depends how we harness the gunas and how we progress. Because all of us are not born with sattvic gunas. We are all born with rajasic and tamasic gunas. Then how have we changed? Through our right actions we have changed. Not by suppressing, by expressing in the right manner. Okay? Now, therefore the question also will arise. What is it that is causing us not to follow the right path? If I have rajasic and tamasic gunas, and here Krishna wants to warn us about the two very important obstacles in our path. Why is it that we don't follow the right teachings or the right way of the scriptures? So, here Krishna identifies two very important obstacles, right? So what are the two very important obstacles here in our path? He says, if you look at the second line, Raga Dvesha. Your likes and dislikes are your greatest stumbling blocks in your spiritual progress. And it is our habit that we classify everything into two categories, isn't it? People we classify into two categories, objects we classify into two categories, experiences we classify into two categories. What are the two categories? Either I like or I dislike. I like this person, I dislike this person. I like this object, I dislike this object. I like this experience, I dislike this experience. Now, what is the problem in likes and dislikes? When I like something, what is the problem? Okay, apart. Okay, when you get attached, what is the problem?
You get frustrated when you don't get satisfied.
Before even frustration comes, I like that. I like this person. I like this object. I like going to this place. I like watching movies. I like this. I like that. What's the problem? But nobody says, I like Bhagavad Gita classes. No, I'm just kidding. So, what is the problem in having so many likes? Not only one like, so many likes we have.
You cannot satisfy all.
Correct. But what is the main problem?
Your likes will dictate your likes.
So, your mind is preoccupied with these likes, isn't it? You're constantly thinking of the things that you like. Mind is preoccupied. And what about things I dislike?
Boy.
What is the problem with that?
Causing you misery.
things which I like, my mind is preoccupied. Things that I dislike, my mind is even more preoccupied with them. Isn't it? Because I hate this, I hate that fellow, that fellow. You know, that person you hate is constantly on your mind also. Isn't it? Right. So what happens now to your mind? The more likes and dislikes you have. Your mind is preoccupied all the time. That mind is whose mind? It's your mind, isn't it? Yet, there are certain disturbing thoughts that happened last time, certain disturbing experiences or somebody you don't like. You, not anybody else, you allow your mind to go to that very person, to that very incident, to that very object, and what happens to you? You agitate yourself. Who has agitated you? You yourself have agitated yourself. Therefore, you have lost control of your mind, isn't it? You know that you should not think of that person because he agitates you. Yet you willfully and gleefully allow your mind to go there and then you get agitated. So who is to blame? You are to blame, isn't it?
Emotionally you are disturbed.
Correct. But who has disturbed you? You yourself have allowed your mind to go in that direction. When you know there is trouble there, you allowed your mind to go there. So are you a master of your mind or is your mind your master? So likes and dislikes have this problem of occupying your mind, preoccupying your mind. The more likes and the more dislikes you generate, the more you keep on putting things into this compartment of likes and dislikes, the more the chance you have for agitating your own mind. So Krishna says this raga.
He is saying that if we put ourselves and say that you don't want to go to the dislike, say you don't like the person.
Right.
But your karma wants you to overcome certain weaknesses. So it puts you back in confrontation with that person.
Correct.
So that you learn to overcome whatever weakness you have.
Correct,
had.
Yes.
So even though you run away from that, don't you think that at times your past karma brings you back to that?
Run away means not run away physically.
Yeah.
But control
in
your
mind.
Mind.
Yeah.
Because why? We may have that person in our own group of relatives. You can't avoid that person. You may be working in a company where that person is irritating you. You can't avoid that person. So not physically, but you have to learn to handle your mind correctly. The problem is not physical. That's why here he says, raga dvesha vyavastita. Vyavastita means these likes and dislikes are not coming from external. They are coming from within you. The object is not causing your likes and dislikes. Objects have no capacity to cause likes and dislikes. Who has caused this like and dislike? You have put the label on everything, likes and dislikes. You have classified things into likes and dislikes. So physically you cannot move away, but you have to start to handle your mind mentally. Because it is within you, it is not external, it is internal. Raga dvesha vyavastita. And when this raga dvesha is within us, what is the problem? That's why he says, he uses a very strong word here. Where is this raga dvesha? If you go back to the first line, you see the word indriyasya, indriyasya. Two times this word indriya is used. Indriyasya, indriyasya. What it means is, this likes and dislikes therefore dictate everything. One part of indriyasya means our five senses of what we call jnana indriyas. Jnana indriyas means the senses like eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin that bring all these experiences from the world. So one group of senses that we have, indriyasya, is all the what we call organs of perception, organs of knowledge. Through these eyes, ears, etc., we interact with the world. So I see something or somebody I don't like, immediately what happens to me? My mind starts reacting. So these organs have got to be disciplined, your organs of perception. Number two is what we call karmendriya. Karmendriya, organs of action. Our hands, our feet, etc., which we use for action, our vocal cords. So in this, we have to start disciplining ourselves. Because this is where likes and dislikes reside. So that's why, in fact, if you remember in chapter 2, the first thing he told us, what is to be disciplined? The senses are to be disciplined. The very first thing. Why? Because already your mind has got so much of impurities. If you are not careful about where your senses are roaming, you keep on putting more impurities in your mind. So first of all, discipline. What you hear, what you see, what you taste, what you touch, etc. So, and so important is this, because he uses the word paripanthinao. Paripanthinao means these likes and dislikes are your biggest enemies. They are your stumbling blocks to your spiritual growth. The more likes and dislikes you cultivate, the more you categorize things into likes and dislikes, the more your mind gets preoccupied with this. So what is Krishna's advice? That these things, one should never come under their sway. One should not be influenced by their likes and dislikes. And how do we not come under the influence of likes and dislikes? Because it is in our sensory, it's at our mind level, it is at our sense level. How do we control the senses? How do we control the mind? That is going to discuss in the closing verses of this chapter. So here he is warning us first that these likes and dislikes are your enemies in your spiritual growth. One has got to understand, you have to be very conscious of your likes and dislikes. And very important to note, likes and dislikes you cannot stop. Why you can't stop? Why can't you stop your likes and dislikes? Because where are they? They are in you. So they are going to pop up time and time again. But what can you do there? How do you use your free will? To have likes and dislikes, you can't help it because they are already within you. But you have free will not to give in to your likes and dislikes. If you give in to your likes and dislikes, that means you allow these likes and dislikes to perpetuate further. It is like the example given of a small flame. When the flame is small, a light breeze blows, it can blow the flame out, right? When the flame is raging out of control, what happens with the breeze? The breeze fans the fire even bigger. Meaning what? When these likes and dislikes are not so strong, it is better for you to kill it in the bud. Because the more and more you keep on feeding your likes and dislikes, it will grow into a raging fire. Eventually your intellect also will not be able to control it. Then what will happen? When your intellect cannot control it, what happens? The intellect starts to justify it. You see, supposing you tell a person who's smoking, when he smokes the first or second cigarette, you can stop at that point. When that person doesn't stop and is smoking 20 to 30 cigarettes a day, then what happens? You tell him not to smoke. You know what he'll tell you? If I don't smoke, the cigarette factory will close down, you know. You know how many people will lose their jobs? Intellect starts to justify the person who's an alcoholic, the person who's taking drugs, the person who's smoking. These are all beautiful examples of how the intellect starts to justify the wrong action. That means what happens? The intellect is no more in control of your mind. So you have to be very conscious of your likes and dislikes, and you have to start being very careful, because once you allow your life to be dictated by likes and dislikes, on one side is likes and dislikes, on the other side is what? Either you lead your life by likes and dislikes, or
right and wrong.
Right and wrong, exactly. So we say something is pleasant but may not be beneficial. Something may be beneficial but it's not pleasant. You can't have it both ways. It can't be pleasant and beneficial also, right? If smoking is pleasant, it is not beneficial. If Gita classes are beneficial, they are not pleasant. Because why? After a hard day's work, you come here, you're trying to concentrate, but you had a tough day, you had a rough boss, you had somebody in the office disturb you, then you come here for 90 minutes, you try to concentrate your mind and you say, no, I cannot concentrate. It's not easy. is not easy. So, but yet, is it beneficial or not?
Yes.
Yes, it's beneficial. But you have to put the effort, you have to overcome that resistance. Right? So, likes and dislikes, be very careful about them. This is what Krishna is warning. And this is because of your own rajasic and tamasic gunas. Okay. Now, therefore, Krishna concludes here in verse number 35. And he talks about this swadharma again, which was earlier mentioned also. Swadharma in verse number 35. And what is this swadharma? We have to understand very carefully. Because there is a lot of misconception about what is this swadharma. So dharma, generally, there are two types of dharma. One type of dharma, and I think we have discussed this in chapter 2, but I'm just going to go through to refresh your memory. So one type of dharma is called Samanya Dharma. Samanya Dharma means universal dharma. I'll explain what it is. And the other type of dharma is called Vishesha Dharma, which means this is what we call as Swadharma. What Krishna is referring to here, Swadharma is called as Vishesha Dharma. Now, what is Samanya Dharma, universal dharma? Universal dharma is that which applies to all walks of society, irrespective of your race, your religion, your color, which country you are born in, doesn't matter. These are called universal dharmas or universal values. Example, in our scriptures, they are classified as Yama and Niyama. You would have heard about this. So what is Yama? Example, Ahimsa. One example of Yama. Ahimsa means non-violence. This applies to everybody, isn't it? Everybody must practice. You're not supposed to harm others. When we talk about non-violence, we mean physical, mental and verbal. You're not supposed to insult people, not supposed to think bad things about people, not supposed to physically harm people. It applies to every human being, Ahimsa. Then there is Satyam, truth. Everybody should speak the truth. Live a life of Satyam, truth. Then there is Asteyam. Asteyam means not taking away other people's possessions. Again, it applies to all strata of society. You should not take away what belongs to others. Another one is called Aparigraha. Aparigraha means excessive possession. Be content with what you have. Don't accumulate unnecessarily. Right? Be content with what you have. The other one is called Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya, again, very simply put, is avoidance of illegitimate relationship with the opposite sex, which should be practiced universal value. Then we have what we call Niyamya, another set of values. Example, Saucham, cleanliness. Maintain physical cleanliness, mental cleanliness. Environmental, keep your environment clean. So it applies externally and internally. Saucham. Santosha. Santosha means be contented with what you have. Right? Why should you be contented? Because all the while we are comparing with what the other person has. And that makes us unhappy. Be content. What you have, what you're supposed to get in life, you get. You work hard, whatever you get, you deserve. Santosha. Tapas. Tapas means practice some austerity, willful self-denial, fasting or whatever it is, practice some form of austerity. It helps us to control our mind. Do not be a slave to your sense organs. That's very important. Swadhyaya, another very important quality. Swadhyaya means daily study of the scriptures. You should engage in study of the scriptures. It's one of the prerequisites. And the last one is called Ishvara Pranidhanam, worship of God. So these are 10 universal values which are practiced across by everybody, irregardless of race, color, which country you belong to, etc. This is what we call Samanya Dharma, universal dharma. But what Krishna is talking about here is called Swadharma, which means Vishesha Dharma, which means special disciplines to be followed based on your individual varna and ashrama. Varna and ashrama means what? Through our life, we will go through different stages of life. Example, first you are a brahmacharya, you are a bachelor, right? You have different type of duties. As a bachelor, you have specific duties. That's what we call vishesha dharma, specific duties, which are different from a householder. When you get married, you get a wife, a spouse, you have children, you have different type of duties. Then from grihas, from grihas, that's called householder, you move on to vanaprasht. Vanaprasht is when you reach the stage of retirement. When your children have grown up, they have left the house, they have got to set up their own individual houses. So you as a retired person, you have different type of responsibilities and duties. And finally, the last stage is sannyas, where you totally renounce everything. So what here Krishna is talking about is, swadharma is your specific dharma. Swa means own. Dharma means my own dharma. Not necessary universal dharma. My dharma which keeps changing based on my age and also what type of work or profession you do. If you are a teacher, you have different dharma. If you are an accountant, you have different responsibilities. If you are a housewife, you have different dharma. So these are not dharmas that can be intermixed. So what here Krishna is trying to say, better is it for you to do your own dharma which is devoid of merit. There is no merit if you do your dharma. Meaning what? He says if you do your duty, there is no merit for you. Don't think that you get extra merit points because you are doing your duty. Why? Because it's your duty. To look after your parents, it's your duty. To look after your children, it's your duty. You can't say, God, I'm looking after my children, please give me moksha because I'm looking after my children. No, it is your duty. So he's saying, to do the duty that you find yourself in, supposing you're a householder, you have certain responsibilities, you do your duty, you're not going to get extra merit. So why therefore do we go through these four stages of life? Brahmacharya, Grihas, Vanaprasht, Sannyas. So a simple explanation, if we understand the four key points when we go through these four stages of life, it falls under learn, burn, U-turn and no return. I will explain. These four stages of life, at Brahmacharya what do you do? You learn, right? You learn how, you learn not only worldly knowledge, you also learn spiritual knowledge. That's why in the ancient times, spiritual knowledge was given at a very early stage. In the school, when the child went to school, they learned geography, history, maths. At the same time, they also learned spiritual knowledge. Why? Because you come out in the world, worldly knowledge will help you find the living, right? And spiritual knowledge will tell you how to live your life. Right? So both you have a balance in life. So Brahmacharya stage is called learn. Then Grihas, householder, is called burn. What do you burn? What do you burn? What do you burn?
Burn your bachelor.
That's a good one.
Your money definitely.
Huh? Your what?
Your money definitely.
But that is the stage for you to burn your desires, isn't it? All the desires that you want to fulfill, you can't fulfill at Brahmacharya stage because you have no money, right? You are at the learning stage, you learn. And then you come to the Griha stage, whatever desires you have to get a spouse, to get children, to set up a business, to further your career, whatever you want to do, travel the world, at the Griha stage, you burn up your desires, but in a dharmic way, right? And then you come to the third stage, Vanapras, which is U-turn. Where do you U-turn?
Back to brahmachari and transcendental.
Where do you U-turn? No, the children have left, they've set up their own house. So, when you were a grihas, when you were a family person, you satisfied all your desires externally. You looked for all your happiness externally. Your dependence was on the external world. So, in Vanaprastha, you U-turn, you look for happiness within, inside. So, you turn inward. That's called U-turn. And finally, sannyas is no return. You cannot go backwards. Once you become a sannyasi, there is no U-turn. You cannot go back. Right? Why? Because once you've taken up sannyas, it's assumed that you have already given up all your worldly thirst, worldly desires. Therefore, sannyas must never be forced upon a person. It must be a natural progression. That's why when Arjuna wanted to take up sannyas, Krishna said, no, you're not ready. Because sannyas is not a trial period. You go there and try, I stay in ashram, oh no, I don't like it, I go back again, then I come back again. No. Once you go into sannyas means you have burnt your bridges. You cannot go back. That's why sannyas is not to be taken lightly. Right? It's not like we go to ashram, we stay for 2 weeks, have meditation camp, and then you become a part-time sannyasi, then you come back in the world. It doesn't work that way. Sannyas means totally burning your bridges with your possessions, with your family, with everything. There is no more. That's why it's called, there is no return. So, learn, burn, U-turn, then no return. So, here he says, if you do, if you follow your responsibilities, there is no, there is, it is devoid of merit. You do not get extra merit. And yet he says that is still better than the duty of another, even if you do it more better. And this is often the case with us, because always we say what? The grass is greener on the other side, isn't it? When we are a student, we always say, whose life is better? My parents' life better, no need to have sit for exams, no need to worry, all the time watching television, relaxing, no worry, nothing to do, have money, can spend. You know, as a teenager, you don't have money to spend. You have to run to your parents for money, right? And you think parents have got money, so they're living a nice life. No? And, you know, they have no exams to sit, no worry about teachers scolding them. So, in the teenage life, what do we wanted to be always? All of us. We wanted to be adults. When you became an adult and you start earning money, then you got rental to pay, then you got electricity bill to pay, then students' university fees to pay, you go to office, a boss calls you, and all kinds of problems you face, financial problems, and then what do you say? I wish I was a teenager. Isn't it? Right? So all of us think that the other person's responsibility is the easiest. And that's what he's telling. Why? Because again of our likes and dislikes. Because we are dictated by our gunas, we look at other people's duties and we feel that's easier. That is more simpler. But there is no such thing as a higher class or lower class duty. That's why in chapter 14, when we are going to talk about a very important verse about the caste system, a very misunderstood, a very exploited, misinterpreted and exploited caste system. There is, which the caste system has been given in our scriptures, but what is it we should understand very clearly. So there is no such thing as higher caste or lower caste. All the castes are equal, the four castes. And all of us are the same. There is no distinction by caste, but that has been created by humans. We will come to that, we will discuss. So here, what Krishna says, better is death in fulfillment of one's duty. It is better for you to die fulfilling all your duties, even though you might not do your duties perfectly. It doesn't matter. But as long as you take up all your duties and responsibilities and complete it to the best of your ability. Because all of us, it's not necessary that we are the best parents, we are the best students, we are the best in everything. No, we are also learning. But most important is we do not neglect, we do not run away from our duties. By doing your duties, there's no merit. But if we die doing our duties, then Krishna says definitely you progress spiritually, you progress. Rather than you look at other people's duties and you start running here and running there and thinking that person's duty is easier, let me try this, let me try that. So, very important, he says, Swadharma, what is your duty in life, what you have been given to do, what you find yourself in that situation, if you are a family person or you have aged parents, whatever responsibilities you have, don't run away from them. Undertake. There is a reason why you have taken birth in a particular family, in a particular environment. Don't run away from it. Okay. Now, so we know that we have to do our duties. We know that we should not be guided or misled by our likes and dislikes. We know all this. And all of us, we know the knowledge. It's not that you come here and I'm telling you something new. No, whatever I'm telling you, actually all of you know. There's nothing, no new revelation. But the question is, why is it that we don't do our duties? Or do our responsibilities. We know we are supposed to pray, we know we are supposed to be grow spiritually, we know that religion is good, we are supposed to follow. Everybody knows this. Anybody go out in the road and ask them, they all believe in God, they know they should spend more time in religion. But yet, why is it that they don't follow? That's the big question. Why is it that we know what is right, we don't follow? We know what is wrong, but we do that. So exactly the same question here Arjuna is asking in verse number 36. A very important question. Why is it that we follow our raga dvesha? We follow what we like and we avoid what we dislike. What is right or wrong? We know what is right. We don't do. What is wrong? We go and do. So this is exactly the question here that Arjuna is asking. And what does he say? He says in the very first line, Atha kena prayukto yam. Prayukto means by what force, as though we are impelled by something, there is something within us. What is that force that makes a person papam charita purusha? Purusha means a person. Charita means commits papam, that makes a person do papam. Here papam does not mean that you commit murder or something, but any type of sin. And what do we mean by sin? What is the definition of sin? Anything that regresses you spiritually. Whatever you do, you tell a lie, you cheat a person, whatever you do, you take alcohol, whatever you do, all that activities or actions that you do which take you away from your spiritual path, that is what is called sin. Okay, so here Arjuna is asking this question: what is the force in us that is driving us, despite knowing that this is wrong, I do it, and despite knowing that I should be doing this, I don't do it? Why are we like that? Why is the human nature like that? What is it that is the driving force that is driving us, anicham api, even against my own will? By some driving force, what is it that is causing us to do wrong things? That is what we also want to know. And all of us know what is dharma. What is the simplest way of understanding what is dharma? Don't go into complicated understanding of dharma. What is the easiest way to understand what is dharma? Which all of us know this basic fact of life. Very simple understanding of dharma. All of us know this. It's a very common fact of life, which we all should be following.
Huh?
Righteous thinking.
Doing the right thing.
Doing the right thing. If I say follow a dharmic life, what do you mean by doing the right thing?
Follow the scriptures.
Practical, very practical. Follow our conscience. Your attitude. don't do to others what you don't want others to do to you. Isn't it? Simple law of dharma. I don't want others to lie to me. That means what? I should not lie to others. I want everybody to like me. Which means what? I should like everybody. I don't want anybody to cheat me. Which means what? I should not cheat people. Simple law of dharma. I should not do to others what I don't want others to do to me. So that simple law of dharma, everybody knows from a child. Even a thief knows it is wrong to steal. Isn't it? Doesn't a thief know it is wrong to steal? How do you know that? So he goes quietly and steals, isn't it? And if somebody steals from a thief, what does the thief do? The thief also gets upset. Say, how can you steal from me? So he knows even stealing is wrong. So it is not that we do not know what is right or wrong. But Arjuna's question here is that, why do we still do it? And this was the classic example when Krishna asked Duryodhan, hey Duryodhan, why are you doing all these things to the Pandavas? You are prosecuting them, you are trying to poison them, you try to burn them in the house of wax. You took away their rightful property. Why are you doing all this? Don't you know it is wrong? And you know what Duryodhan said? Krishna, don't tell me what is right or what is wrong. I know what is right, I know what is wrong. So don't teach me. But my problem is what? What is right, I don't like to do. What is wrong, I love to do that. It is as though there is a force within me that is attracting me to do the wrong things. So, the same question here Arjuna asks, what is that which drives us to the wrong path? And the last closing verses of this chapter 3, all the way from verse 37 to verse 43, Krishna will answer this question, what is it that is causing us to go on the wrong path? And then he will also give us the remedy, how to correct that also. So let us look at what Krishna says, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, in verse number 37. So here Lord Krishna speaks now to answer Arjuna's question. And first of all, he identifies the two biggest culprits which are our biggest problems. So in the very first line he says, Kama Esha Krodha Esha. Esha means this. Kama, this desire, Esha Krodha, this anger is your biggest enemy. Desires and anger are the two biggest enemies that you have. And why is there desire? What is it that creates desire, or what is it that creates the anger in us? He says in the very second line, Rajo Guna Samudbhava. Samudbhava means it is born. This desire, this anger is born from your rajasic gunas, which are within you. The more rajasic gunas you have, the more desire is born in you, the more anger. Here, anger can be taken at different levels. It can be agitation, irritation. To the very extreme, there is anger. But even at the very small level, we face all kinds of irritation. You know, somebody haunts you, you get irritated. Get angry, you get agitated or irritated at every little thing. All this is because of your rajasic gunas. So rajasic gunas, when they are in you, they will create these desires and they will create this irritation, anger and frustration in you. So now the question is, how does this anger and desire, how does it affect us? How does it prevent us from progressing spiritually? That is the question. And the object of desire may vary, right? It is not that all of us have intense desire. We may have desire for different objects and we may have different intensity of desires also and different intensities of anger. All of us have anger. Don't say you don't have anger. If those of you say you don't have, never got angry, there's only one answer.
Huh?
you have yet not met a person who has caused you to be angry yet. The anger is there. It is just that you have not come met that particular person or the particular situation in your life. But all of us have that anger. Why? Because all of us have rajasic gunasins. So this desire, this anger, which is born out of rajasic gunas, Krishna says in the third line, Mahashano. Mahashano means, here is translated as all devouring. It's a great eater. So what does it eat away? This desire, this anger, it eats away. It consumes. What does it consume? Huh? Shanti. What does it consume? How does it, no, how does it affect you? How, what does it eat away? What does it take away?
Energy.
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 What does anger and desire eat away? Great devourer, it's a great consumer. It eats away your logical thinking. That wisdom is in you. You know what is right, what is wrong. When you lose your anger, what do? You shout, you scream, you say words in front of your children, in front of your spouse. Don't you know that these words are wrong? You know. Why did you say it? Anger overpowered your logical thinking, your wisdom. That's why it's called a great eater. It is not that we do not know what is right or wrong. It is when desire, you see, when desire overpowers, we find people do things which we look at it and we say, why do they do it? Why do they take corruption money? Why do they do this? Because that desire overpowered his logical thinking, his intellect, his right way of knowledge. It is not that that person doesn't know. This is the biggest danger of desires and anger. Because when anger subsides, what do we say? Why did I say that? Why did I do this? Why did I throw that check? Regret comes. Means you know. But why didn't you do it at that time? Because anger ate away your sense of thinking. That's why he calls it not just chano. Chano means eater. Mahashano. It's a great eater. It's a great consumer. It consumes away your power of thinking, your logical thinking, your intellect. And not only that, mahapapma. It causes you to sin. Sin again here means it causes you to do wrong things that take you away from the spiritual path. Losing your temper, anger, what you call all these kind of wrong things that you do, mahapapma, they take you away in the wrong direction. So, Krishna says, Vidhi no, enam iha vairinam. Vairinam means they are your greatest enemy. This desire, this anger, which is born out of rajoguna, is your greatest enemy. Why? Because it consumes away your capacity to think logically. It affects you in that way. Whatever knowledge you have, whatever upbringing you have, if you are not careful, when desire and anger overpower that, all the knowledge goes behind. So, how, the next question, of course, we want to know is, how do we overcome this? Anger and desire, which Krishna will discuss in the closing verses. I will stop here, and are there any questions?
Vasudevasutam devam kansa chanuramardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadguru.
Thank you. Hari Om.